Blog Talk Radio.
I recently quit my job and took on a new venture in life. Welcome to Music from People I Know, where I catch up with friends, past and present, and talk about our music, inspiration, and passions. With a 15-year professional career in the music industry, I have met a lot of cool and interesting people. I'm here to share our stories. All right, today's show is brought to you by Buds Limited and Parachute, 104 Cardinal Way, Parachute, Colorado, 81635. Remember, it's 21 and up. My guest today is Dave Hale. He's here on the line with me. He's been he's like my second father, basically, and I look up to this guy quite a bit. So I'm glad to have him on the show, and I'm excited that we get to chit-chat some.
Well, thanks,
you there, Dave?
It's great to be here.
Awesome. Well, you know, so you've been playing music for quite some time, right? You started how long ago?
I started when I was 13, so that puts it about 54 years now.
54 years of tunes.
Thousands of songs.
Where do you bank
not,
all that?
Not by... Yeah, well, you know, when you're young, the brain is like a sponge. And, you know, I can't remember lyrics that I learned last week, but I can remember songs from 50 years ago. And I will never forget those songs.
Right, because you've played them for how long? Now, if you were to play for another 50 years, are the songs that you're playing now that you're struggling with, are they going to be the same as the songs that were 50 years ago?
I would think so. What I've found is, for me, well, of course, now that I'm in a support position rather than a frontliner, I tend to just learn the parts that I need to play to do my job, and I don't really pay much attention to lyrics anymore. You know, I'm more of a how the song sounds rather than what it actually says, because I'm not the lead singer anymore. So that's I will always remember the chord structures and the, you know, the musical details, but not so much the lyrics anymore.
Yeah, see, I'm kind of the same way. I have I have an affinity to the music. Something about it, like just the way that I hear it, it clicks in my brain. Do you get that same thing where it's just this connection to it?
I definitely do. It's you know, the music to me is the emotional part of the song, and that's the part that I try. I mean, I'm the bass player in the band, and you know, every instrument has its forte in projecting a musical moment, and you know, there's a lot to playing the bass, just as there is to playing rhythm guitar, which was
right,
my job for years and years.
A lot of people seem to think that playing bass is like playing guitar, but it's like a completely different beast. You're doing the nuances the woofy push, and you're the push and pull of the act, right?
That is correct. And it, you know, working with the drums, which are the heartbeat, you know, that's, They say, and it's true, and the band that I'm in, we've proven it to be true many times. If nothing else is playing but the bass and the drums, the song still goes on. And
but if one of those people
drop
out, the song kind of does drop.
Well, the emotional impact changes.
Right.
You know, when the rhythm guitarist drops out, and leaves the rhythm to the bass and the drums, you know, it still goes on with that same beat, but all of a sudden the feel of the song changes, which puts more focus actually on the lyrics. And, you know, that's where a song can really speak to you. A lot of bands that I've seen, everybody starts playing, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, they kick it in, and everybody plays to the end, which
right.
is fine, and that's a perfectly valid approach to a song. But it's the interplay of the instruments with the vocal. You know, of course, without a vocal, you have no song. You just have some music. Right. But, you know, you can't, people call it a song if it's an instrumental, but it's not. It's an instrumental. A song needs lyrics.
Huh.
So, you know, you can emphasize
that. So the lyrics
that,
is what makes the song.
The lyrics is what makes a song. That's right. Without the lyrics, you're just playing an instrumental. Which is fine.
So,
you know, plenty
so
of
where does that emphasis
bands,
come
big deal.
From?
Pardon me?
Where does that emphasis come from?
Well, which emphasis? The musical emphasis?
Yeah.
Or the lyrical emphasis?
We're talking more than musical.
The music,
like from the bass player, where does that come from?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I know exactly what you mean.
Well, you know, there's like that strong point and then the weak points, and how do we figure out where that goes? I just do it. I don't pay attention to what I'm doing.
I do that frequently. You just, you know, it's how where the music takes you. You know, you want to be loud and you want to be strong and you want to push the beat, but there comes a time that it's time to relax. And, you know, you can't, one thing that I've learned in 50 years is you can't beat up an audience for very long or you'll lose. You know, everybody needs a break.
Yeah. You need to give them a chill point.
Right. They can only be on the dance floor for so long before they've got to get a drink of water or, you know, they got to sit down and take their shoes off. And by varying the songs themselves, you can give people like mini breaks during a song where they can, you know, they can grab each other and, you know, do a little, not slow dancing, but, you know, do a little more up close dancing. And take it a little easier before you slam them for the final chorus.
Right. See, that's, I think, you know, music today is quite a bit different than it was, you know, when you started. And, you know, I think that's one of the big differences is a lot of that, you know, up and down and, you know, the crescendos and, you know, all the dynamics that are present in, you know, the older tunes and some of the more traditional genres like, you know, country and folk and, you know, even rock and roll.
Yeah.
You know, what else are some of the differences that you've noticed? And do you think you'll make adaptions and start adaptations and start using those tools?
Oh, sure. Sure. You know, when I first started, I started my musical life as a folkie. And, you know, I'm going to say our because I was learning how to play guitar and sing along with my brother. And our biggest influence was Peter, Paul, and Mary. Peter, Paul,
Great
and
group.
Mary, they're, oh, fabulous group. And, you know, we're all the way till the end of them. Their big thing was, it wasn't their big thing, but they did a lot of songs with messages. And, you know, like Bob Dylan, they popularized Bob Dylan back in the day before anybody had ever heard of him, really. They picked up a couple of his songs and got him out there on the radio and made people want to hear the guy that had written these songs. And, you know, so he's, and I'm sure he's thanked them many times over the years for helping his career along.
I would hope so.
They did songs where they actually were saying things. And, you know, I wanted to be a part of that. And my brother did also. And they were, you know, of course, their arrangements were very intricate for two guys playing guitars. They never played the same parts, you know. So from them, I learned you got one guitar playing one thing, slap a capo on the other guitar so you're playing in a different register, and you know then even if you're strumming, it sounds like two different things because they're in two different registers. And
so that's the point of the capo, huh?
That is. Well, the point of a capo is to be able to know three chords and play in as many keys as there are frets on the neck.
Oh, sure,
you know,
okay.
You can change the key. You know, people, and in fact, as you know, I played with it in Basalt for 6 years.
Right.
And all during that time, people would come up to me and say, "Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff on guitar. You're really a good player." Well, I'm not, really. And Glenn Campbell, I saw an interview with Glenn Campbell. He said, if you want people to think that you're a good guitar player, learn how to use a capo. And, you know, and no kidding, that's what he said. And that, for me, was the key. I said, well, I'm not, and if you ever look at my fingers to see the chords that I'm playing the same five chords. I'm just doing it in different places on the neck.
Right.
So it's every time you put a capo on, it sounds different.
Right.
You've changed the guitar.
So how do you plan on adapting some of the modern stuff to music?
Well, you mean some of the old stuff? You can take some of this modern stuff, and we do it in the Bo Hale treatment. We will take modern songs, and we give them the treatment, and we play them the way we play them. If people ever want to come and hear us play, and if they're we're a cover band, basically. We do some original songs, but we're 90% covers and 10% original. If you come and hear us play those cover songs, you will never hear us play it like the record, because we didn't make the record.
Right.
You know, we can't possibly play it like the record because we didn't make it. And we don't think in terms of those musicians that made the record. So we have to play it our way. And whether we speed it up, slow it down, drop the instruments out on verse 3, strip the harmonies out of it, or add harmonies to it, you know, that's how you adapt things, and that's how we play. You know, we don't.
So everything you guys do is an adaptation.
Right. We do it. I mean, it's still, you still are dealing with the structure. The structure
of the same format
song. Right. And we try to respect that as much as we're able. And you know, most of the time, if you do, if you're good at what you do, people don't even notice that you're not playing like the record, because
they're having fun.
To play songs that people know, and you know, their brains will fill in things that people know, whether they hear them or not.
It's a pattern, and their brain fills that pattern.
That's right. And if you notice that at some of the gigs that you play, if you play cover songs, you know, people, if they expect to hear something, they will, whether you've played it or not. It's a funny, the brain's a funny thing.
Right. So you don't have to do the ee-hees in any Michael Jackson songs?
No. No.
Everybody just hears them, right?
That's right. If you do an approximation of the bass line to, say, Beat It or Thriller, you know, if you can approximate it, you don't have to be Chuck Rainey or, you know, whoever played the bass on that, to play it exactly. If you approximate it, the first turnaround on that, if you get that, that you can play anything during the rest of the song, because they know as soon as they hear that, they know what song it is. And then that's what they hear.
I can't not hear that. When I hear Michael Jackson, it's that. That's what I hear, is Billie Jean.
that's right. But you don't have to be able to play it just like he did. You know?
No, you don't.
All you got to do is fool that audience's ears into hearing that.
Well, let's fool the audience's ears with some of your tunes.
Well, okay.
I got on the road lined up. Came off of Call Me Omar, right?
Call Me Omar. Before that, that is probably, well, it's one of the oldest songs of mine. I actually wrote that and first recorded it in 1970 as a little folky tune. I was sitting out on the porch one day, always about 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And we lived in this little house. My first wife lived in this little house right next to the freeway. I mean, the freeway was our side yard. And I was out there, and there weren't too many cars going by back then at 5:30 in the morning. And, I was looking around and seeing these cypress trees and carob trees, and you're familiar with those California mornings where it's the air is sort of moist from the ocean flow, and you know, the sun's coming up and you can smell the eucalyptus trees, and you know what all that's like, it was so peaceful that it made me think of road trips that I had been on and camping trips where you just wake up in the morning and everything's so new and fresh, and I wanted to be there. And that's how that song came about. I first recorded it with my friend Maury. Okay.
Oh, on the road. It's morning and cold outside my door. But I don't know where I could go. I'm still yawning, listening.
So, you know, during that song, I lit up a blunt. Now I'm smoking this District 8 blunt. It's actually really good, Dave. If you ever feel like, you know, letting loose a little bit, you should go down to Bud's Limited and Parachute.
Well, I just may do that.
Yeah, this District 8 blunt comes really cool. Two little blunts so you can share it with somebody special.
And I know just who that is.
So, you know,
my
I was
little
listening
bride.
To that song. I was listening to that song earlier when you sent it over to me. And, you know, I was thinking about how long it's been since since we did that. We did that like 7 years ago. We did that recording at your house.
In 2011.
Was it 11? So, yeah, that'd be 7 years ago.
Well, that was when it was finished. So we probably recorded it in 2010.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
God. Man, that's a while ago. But that song was awesome. Like, I remember recording that. We had so many mics everywhere and, you know, so many different musicians. Who are some of the musicians on that?
Well, we have my brother Bo playing the slide guitar. My good friend Ray DeBacco on drums. A girl that's very special to me. My daughter Stephanie singing the harmony vocal.
God, she can really sing. That is one thing she is really damn good at.
She is. And I think it was me playing, well, it was me playing the lead guitar and the rhythm guitar. And I sent the tracks to a friend in Upland, California, and named Butch Barbeta, and he performed the harmonica part.
See, and I didn't remember doing that.
Back to me.
And I remembered you mentioning that.
Yeah, you recorded everything up to that point, and when we were done, I sent him just a rough mix, and he recorded. Yeah, it was funny. I sent him the rough mix on one side, on the left-hand side of a stereo track, and left the other track for him to do his part. And then I flew his part into the mix and mixed him down.
Yeah, so you got him soloed.
Yeah.
That's an old school recording trick. Not many people do that anymore, Dave.
Well, I know, but I'm an old school kind of guy. If I could still be working on a 4-track tape recorder, I'd be thrilled. that's more my speed, you know. And I became very good in the old days at editing and splicing and all of that. I know.
But you use sonar.
That.
How do you like it?
Well, I like it fine. I'm up to sonar 6, I think. I'm way behind because my computer that I use for that is so old that it won't handle any newer version than sonar 6.
Well, if it ain't broke,
but
don't fix
it,
right?
That's right. And for my needs, it's perfectly adequate. I haven't yet figured out a way to fill up 256 tracks. So, I could do two notes at a time on each track. So, it's adequate for me.
So, I get a bit crazy when I'm recording. I have the last recording I did was with a buddy, Brock McLeod. And we had, on the drum track, we had 17 microphones on the drums.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, because
well,
we
many,
had...
How many did you use for mine? It's like 6 or something. 6
yeah,
or 8.
I want to say it was at least 8, maybe 6.
Yeah.
See, we had kick, snare, snare bottom, a couple of overheads, and then toms. I don't know that I had hi-hat.
Right.
That's where it gets questionable. And I know I didn't have, any rooms.
I think you did have a hi-hat because one of the songs on that album was heavy with, well, not heavy because it didn't get mixed that way, but he had quite a bit of hi-hat on there. And it wasn't one
it's
of the
ones
that I
funny how
that
works out.
Yeah.
Where'd it go?
Yeah, you did a really nice job on that for me.
That was
fun. I told
you
that before, but it's still true.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun because it really was like the reminder that I could still do what I had a passion for, you know?
Well, sure. Sure, that's always exciting when you get to remind yourself that you're still in the game.
Right.
You know, you haven't.
So what was your most memorable? What's the most memorable venue?
The most memorable venue.
Yeah.
Oh, gee. Oh, I don't know. You know, it probably was the high school auditorium when I was in high school. When I was in high school, there weren't that many musicians. We had some famous ones coming out of the same school. Guys that I went to school with, Scotty Gorham from Thin Lizzy, Ed King from Lynyrd Skynyrd, and he was in a band called the Strawberry Alarm Clock before that, you know, when he was still in high school. So we had some couple of famous guys. The music scene back then was a little different in that the folkies like me and my brother mixed with Scotty Gorham and Ed King, who were, you know, real rockers. And they respected us, and we respected them. And it was all very, you know, there was a lot of camaraderie just because we were all musicians. And I don't know that that's still the case. I like to think it is. I think I get along great with musicians from all genres. But it was very, well, of course, then we were just getting into the hippie stage too, which, you know, love, peace and love and and all that.
And smoking dope.
But it was very much peace and love, and everybody got along great. So I think probably my most memorable venue would have been that high school auditorium, because the people that weren't musicians thought the musicians were either weird guys because they didn't seem to do anything but sit around and play guitar, or they loved them. And there was about the only two ways people thought of musicians back in those days.
You either were or weren't.
Yeah, to get up there and show them that, yeah, okay, maybe we're just sitting around playing guitars, but this is what it sounds like, and to have them go crazy for it was the best feeling I ever had.
Yeah, you know, that was my first experience, really, playing at Burbank High School.
In high school. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's the same kind of auditorium.
Things.
Although, I think for me, going out on Dodger Stadium with the high school band and playing out there before the, like, for the pregame at the baseball game, that's kind of the most memorable for me.
Well, that would be. You know,
that
there
was a Burbank
there
night.
There were plenty of...
So, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, there were many times that were memorable for me playing in church in Basalt, where the band was just clicking and the music sounded so good, and I would be up there on stage just crying my eyes out because it was so sweet and so beautiful, and I couldn't believe that I was a part of it.
Yeah, you know, you guys really did have a good band there when you guys were all playing together.
Right, we had some not so great Sunday mornings, but most of the time we were in tune with each other, and I think we were able to really put across the songs we were playing and touch that congregation.
So if you had it your way, would you be on stage or would you be in the studio?
I would be on stage. You know, that's the place for me. I like the studio because then I can do what I want to do the way I want to do it. and nobody's going to bother me. And if it's any good, they'll tell me. If it sucks, they'll tell me that too. And you know, I still get my feelings hurt occasionally if somebody doesn't like what I do, but I totally understand it. You know, because I'm, you know, basically I'm still a folky, and the kind of music that I've been making is, well, Call Me Omar. It was originally supposed to be titled Aberration, because it was for me to arrange my folky songs in more of a rock or a country format was an aberration for me. And well, it really was. And that was just my attempt to do something different with those songs. I've lived with those songs, for example, on the road for, you know, virtually 50 years. And it was time to shake it up a little bit and try to do something different.
Well, let's shake it up right now.
Pardon me?
Let's shake it up real quick. I got Jesse's Blue Eyes ready.
Okay. Now that one's still pretty folky.
I like that one.
Blue Eyes. Jesse is a made up name for a girl who thought she was the cat's meow, and you know, went through her life. She's passed on now. She went through her life thinking that the world revolved around her, and that she didn't have to do anything but bat those baby blues at you, and she could get anything she wanted, and it worked for her. She went through her life. She was married. I think she beat Liz Taylor for, well, I think she tied Liz for the number of marriages at 8. But she Liz married Richard Burton twice, so she only actually had 7 husbands, and Jesse had 8 different husbands. and her lifestyle just finally got the best of her, and took her down.
Well,
it was a very tragic story.
Well, let's hear this tragic story.
Jesse had to try all the living find what she wanted to keep. She claimed it hers with no giving, flying to those waters so
You know, that one was really easy to get lost in. I actually was like, wait. Oh, wait.
You know, I always,
maybe it's,
I always think of Rick Springfield.
Yeah,
he did his song
I can get
about
that.
Jesse's girl. He wishes he was Jesse. He wanted Jesse's girl.
Yeah, it's a great song. So.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Hold on, I had something ready for you, and you know that blunt got me pretty stoned, David. I must say.
That's okay. They are your sponsor.
Yeah, right. So how much of your day is spent playing around on an instrument?
Not very. Lately, it's been we had about a 2 month hiatus from the Bohale treatment, and in fact, we're just kicking off the summer season this past weekend with a wedding in Boulder, which was great fun and great music, and we had a ball. But during those 2 months. Oh, I tried to get down maybe 20 minutes a day. Mainly because I knew I had to start toughening up again for the summer season. Because we've got about 15 gigs coming up between now and mid-August that are already on the books. And, of course, you know, we get bogus calls, not daily, but pretty often, looking for us for this and that, and you know, clubs and stuff. Mostly,
so
we're still playing the private parties and that sort of thing, corporate stuff.
I was helping you out around the house last week or so, and we ended up talking, and you're going into retirement, But it sounds like you're working a lot more now, though.
Well, well, you've heard of the honey-do list. And,
yeah.
And, you know, honey-do this and honey-do that.
Yeah.
So I've been working on that a lot. Musically, not so much. I'm still down in the studio. Actually, I did my latest project. I have a lot of archival stuff going back to maybe 1965, which I'm transferring from tape to digital. So
are these your old recordings?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
I mean, I've got the first recordings we ever made back when we were learning Peter, Paul, and Mary songs. And we were one of those lucky groups in junior high school, because a guy heard us and he immediately wanted to become our manager. And and we were, you know, I was 14 and my brother was 13, and we knew about, if we knew 10 songs then, I would be surprised, because it was just such a struggle, because we did not own guitars at the time, so we'd have to borrow them from friends and, you know, keep them as long as we could and learn as much as we could in the time that we had them before we had to give them back. And but this guy heard us and wanted to be our manager. And so he booked us for a gig funny thing, we started playing at churches. He booked us for a church social that was held at somebody's house, one of their congregation members' house, and they paid us for it. And, you know, back in 65, you could buy a lot for $5. And we got $5 a piece for playing like a half an hour at this church social, which half an hour, that was about all we could do, because we didn't know any songs. And,
you mean five chords.
So we've actually been professional musicians since day one, you know, since we got from our very first gig. So that was exciting back
then.
I have tapes. Yeah, oh, very. And he took us to a studio then and paid for the studio time to record these 8 or 10 songs that we knew. And it's terrible. it sounds like three kids on three cheap guitars and, you know, barely croaking out these songs, because we didn't, you know, our singing voices hadn't developed at all. And, but we were, you know, we gave it a good go, but it's, you know, it is kind of fun to hear those, and I'm not ashamed of them in any way, because of what it was, and you know, so it's becoming a very fun project for me to hear these again and digitize them. And you know, if anybody ever shows any interest in them, I'm happy to make copies for anybody that wants them. I'm not proud.
Make a blooper reel.
Pardon me?
Let's listen to Lady Doubt. How about that? I saved the best for last.
Okay. Lady Doubt, you think that's the best?
I think I like that one.
I think that's the best one. Okay, that one I wrote in 1974 for a girl that I had met and seen her from afar and was totally smitten with her, and she became my girlfriend. I couldn't believe my luck. And,
right?
But as the relationship went on, and it was, you know, back when you're young, 6 months seems like forever, you know. And, you know, as it went on, I began to, you know, just to doubt the relationship and, you know, the things that she was saying to me. And I don't know, the song is a metaphor for the doubts that I was having about that relationship at that time. So, and it's always been one of my very favorite songs that I've written. It's I never was very good at writing the old formulaic songs, you know, where you have a verse, chorus, verse, chorus, bridge, verse, chorus, you know, and out. I never was, that's, you know, A, B, A, B, C, A, B. This song is written basically A, 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 A. It's just five verses strung together.
Well, let's take a listen to it.
Okay.
She came in the window flying high. She flew through the window hiding low. When I walked to the window by and by, I saw there was no place left to go. She followed to find me at her side, but she didn't know how much I knew. When she motioned me to her, how I cried, 'cause I didn't want to know her truth. Spoke a bit to me of my crimes. She told me I did not care for you. When she turned me to face her, I denied that my only desire was for the view. To be flying from my side, as she quietly watched for other clues. When she smiled me to kiss her, I complied, 'cause I didn't want to run pursuit. She flew through the window hiding high. Came in the window flying low. When she walked to the window by and by, she saw there was no place left to go. Thank you.
Man, that is a fantastic song.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, you know, Lady Doubt, man.
That whole album was kind of funny for me. By changing up those songs, and I sent copies to some of my old friends who I've known for 50 years, and it seems to me that the people that knew me back then and knew those songs when they were new, they did not like the record. Whereas people that had recently met me and had really never heard any of my solo things, they liked it. Which I thought
it's funny how you get mixed reviews like that.
Yeah, I have even had one gal that's a very good and old friend of mine call me up and say, "What did you do to those songs? Why did you do it like that?"
And, you let Michael handle it.
I had to explain it to her. You know, you just
this
can't
new
keep
thing
doing
called
the
stereo.
Same thing. Right. I can't keep doing the same thing the same way forever. You know, that to me is boring.
There's no growth.
I mean, unless it's so spectacular that, you know, everybody would be up in arms. And really, the old friends were up in arms.
Well, it really is
a
good song. I was really happy to have you on the show.
Oh, it's been great for me. I'm glad you asked me to do it. I got
to
admit, I was a little nervous about doing it, but, you know, you said it'd be okay, and it's okay.
It was, right? It was a heck of a lot of fun, I think.
Well, we need to do some more recording.
We sure do. We'll have to, you have some songs ready?
Well, I've got a couple that, you know, I haven't been writing very much lately, but I still have songs that are, you know, that they're itching to get recorded just so I can, you know, put them out there and get them behind me so that I can move forward. I'm moving forward in rearranging the songs. I'm sure they will be more folky because that's really who I am. Which you know will it'll please me. Like I told you when we started doing Omar. I still want to use the approach of, you know, a new arrangement or something like that to freshen them up and to get somebody else's opinion on what I'm doing. 'Cause you can't really progress in a vacuum, you know?
Right.
And if
I have to cut you off
myself,
there.
Okay.
Dave, it's been awesome to have you on the show. We'll talk soon.
Well, thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. And keep up the good work.
Excellent. I recently quit my job and took on a new venture in life. Thanks for listening. Show your support by subscribing and sharing. Music from people I know.